Another group of artifacts from Nimrud is also noteworthy. One of the largest collections of carved ivories in the ancient world was found here. Carved ivory was used to decorate furniture and various small objects. So these represent a type of artifact that we haven't seen before, because most furniture was made of wood or some other perishable object. Thousands of these ivories were dumped in the wells of the palace during the destruction of the city in 612 BC. And this exotic material gives us a glimpse into the true luxury of the royal household. A few were found in place, and they adorned the backs of chairs. Gold leaf was originally laid over the ivory, so they were very colorful. One of the most famous of these pieces, an ivory plaque showing a lioness attacking an African youth, was gilded and inlaid with lapis lazuli and carnelian. This has been missing since the Iraq Museum was looted in 2003. It was one of a pair, the other is now in the British Museum, and this probably decorated a chair. Ivory was part of the tribute from the western regions that Assyria controlled. Both the raw materials and the ivory carvers were brought to work in the new capital. These ivories would illustrate the resources that the Assyrian rulers controlled. Assurnasirpal's legacy was that of an ambitious general who enriched the treasury of Assyria through tribute and who introduced a new type of royal residence that displayed his success as other Near Eastern rulers did. Shalmaneser III, who ruled from 858 to 824 BC, campaigned as actively and successfully as his father had. Shalmaneser was especially interested in expanding westward in the hopes of securing access to the Mediterranean Sea. 5 years after he took the throne, Shalmaneser faced an unusually strong and successful alliance of Western states when he crossed the Euphrates River in 853 at Karkar in Syria. According to Shalmaneser's own account, his opponents massed about 60,000 troops, plus 3,940 chariots, 1,900 cavalry, and 10,000 camels. Shalmaneser claimed absolute victory over this force, as we might expect, although he did not return to the region for 6 years, and this usually leads us to believe that the victory wasn't quite as decisive as the ruler might have claimed. By that time, when Shalmaneser returned, the coalition had collapsed, and many states in the Levant offered Shalmaneser tribute in exchange for peace. A carved black obelisk dating to the reign of Shalmaneser, now in the British Museum, includes five scenes of subject states bringing tribute to the king. One scene shows Jehu of the House of Omri, the king of northern Israel, prostrate before Shalmaneser as he presents the Assyrian king with his tribute. This is the earliest known image of a figure described in the Old Testament, so it has unusual historical importance for us. Assyrian relations with Babylon during the 9th century were basically peaceful, with a negotiated border established in the early 9th century. During Shalmaneser's reign, we know that he visited the region and made the traditional sacrifices at Babylon, although we don't know in what capacity he did this, either as an invited guest or as a feared neighbor. We know that there were kings of Babylon at this time, and in fact Shalmaneser came to the aid of one of them, Marduk Sakir-Shumi, when the king's brother tried to overthrow the Babylonian ruler. One of the key pieces of evidence for the relationship between Assyria and Babylon during Shalmaneser's reign comes from a scene carved on Shalmaneser's throne base at Nimrud. The scene depicts Shalmaneser and the king of Babylon, Marduk Zakir-Shumi, shaking hands as equals. Since Assyrian kings were not accustomed to convey any relationship other than complete domination over their fellow rulers, this is especially striking.